And now the questions can go either to Bill or to Tim. Tim, you could.
Okay.
Yeah, those, these mics are on. So, and we'd like to give priority to legislators and high-ranking state agency officials if they have questions. Yes. Yes, Jen.
Hi, Professor, or Dr. Bartek. Your comment about quality early child development programs not paying off until 20 years. There's evidence that from research sponsored by Pew Charitable Trusts and the Partnership for American Economic Success and Pre-K Now that show those returns can happen in as little as 2 and 3 years, and certainly in 5 in the school systems and such. What I wanted to ask both of you, though, could you comment on economic development and the effects that globalization, talent, and innovation has in state economic development?
Well, I mean, the first comment on your thing, yeah, I mean, if you want to, if you go to the Upton Institute website, I have tons of stuff on early childhood development and various papers, and then, as you mentioned, Partnership for American Economic Success, as well as the Committee for Economic Development, have a lot of research in this area. That's a pretty broad issue. Could you define that a little more? What impact? I mean, that's like a meta question. Define that a little bit more. What you want me to talk? What you want us to talk about with globalization?
Well, one of the things they early on you talked about economic development things, and let me get to the question: what defines economic development? And I'm going to one of the early slides. On the, could you list about 3 or 4 of the characteristics for new economies? So talking about in the new economy, and we got one characteristic of changing to IT, for example, instead of old-line manufacturing. And that's about as far as it went. I was wondering if you could comment on the influence that globalization, innovation, and talent has on in the new economy, characteristics in the new economy.
Is my mic on?
Yes.
Okay. I'll comment. It actually has a big effect. And one of the trends that's happening is what some people call the modularization of manufacturing. What that has to do with is that companies are moving in the exact opposite direction that they did during the conglomerate era. And instead, what they're trying to do is figure out what their core business is and what's their core skills, and we'll hire or we'll buy who's the best at, you know, running something that we used to run ourselves. And so what it really means is that the company or corporation becomes a nexus of contracts, which means that they're much more mobile and much more likely to outsource and offshore. And so that's one of the big trends, and it's being driven by the whole supplier, you know, chain revolution, which in part Walmart had a lot to do with, and a lot of other firms. There's a lively debate about, you know, is this all bad for the U.S. or not, or to what degree it is and to what degree it's not. I mean, the other thing that's going on is that there's a lot of new interconnections between let's say India and California in terms of all the software engineering and work. There's work that's going on in both places. So it's not just we're losing all our work, but there's the transformations in terms of international networks of skilled immigrants working in multiple countries.
And I guess I don't know if I have anything tremendously original to say on this, except that I think it is right to say that given the global economy, if the U.S. is going to have high wages, you have to have high skills. Then the issue is how you operationalize it. What do high skills mean? Does that mean everyone needs to go to a 4-year college? And then maybe if that's not enough, then everyone needs to get a master's degree, and then everyone needs to get a PhD? And I think the answer is no. But skills need to be defined broader than that, and they also need to be defined not only as the skills of the workers, but the skills of the business managers. So part of what some of the economic development programs that I think have the evidence of higher bang for the buck do, in terms of the global economy, they play the role of increasing skills not only of workers, but also of small and medium-sized businesses. And I think that, you know, if you're going to maintain high-wage jobs, you need to be high productivity, you're going to be high productivity, then both the workers and the managers need to have high levels of skills. And what those skills are and how they will change over time, I'm sure they'll be different 20 years from now than they are today.
I'm Representative Brooks. I come from a rural district. You made the comment that economic development should be in metropolitan areas. How do you define that?
Okay. First of all, what I should say, what I meant to say is I consider rural areas also to be part of a regional economy. I mean, you actually can find maps if you want to. The U.S. Department of Commerce has maps that divides the entire U.S., including the rural U.S., into economic regions. It can be a little bit harder in rural areas because it could be the commuting patterns are not quite as stable or a little harder to find. But my point is simply that economies are not these small little township things or even county things typically. They're typically bigger than that. On the other hand, states are really bigger than what local economies are. The state of Wisconsin is really an agglomeration of different regional economies. And I'm sure that's apparent to anyone who's been here. State of Michigan, true of almost any state, unless you're Rhode Island, I guess. But most states, there are sets of regional economies. And that what needs to organize your thinking. So in your area, your district, the issue is what is the relevant regional economy and how do we get those folks working together? Because job creation in any part of that region will help people throughout the region in getting more jobs or better quality jobs.
Representative Hilgenberg, dealing with regional economies, I'm interested in your opinion on border state border regional economies that cross state borders, and you didn't place as much emphasis on incentives for businesses to locate one side or other of the border. How do you address that?
Well, obviously, incentives do have a bigger effect when you get to location within a regional economy, and the reality is border areas do create an issue. Because obviously, maybe people differ in their opinions on this. My sense is certainly some parts of Wisconsin would be part of the Minneapolis-St. Paul metropolitan area. Part of it was Duluth-Superior, right? And then there would be the Milwaukee. Then you get the issue of where the Chicago metro area stops, which I'm not quite sure where it stops anymore. And there you do have the potential that incentives can play a more major role than they could in overall. I still think overall incentives tend to be relatively expensive, but certainly it is the case that states often feel compelled to respond to their nearby state. So, for example, the mega tax credit program that Michigan has, which is a very expensive economic development tax credit, started that kind of program started up in Kentucky. Ohio felt compelled to match it because Cincinnati, is right on the border there. And then Michigan felt they had to kind of match Ohio. So there is this thing where, one state, feels compelled to match another. I think those are tough choices because programs like that can sometimes be necessary to respond to competition. On the other hand, they're very expensive.
I think we have time for one more question. Any other questions? Oh, yes, Jen.
Yeah, question for Dr. Bartek. The third dot point, last slide on your presentation, referred to the question whether or not economic development programs are large enough, and then you put it in the context of a $232 billion state GDP. What would be the de minimis size of all programs to be large enough?
I don't know if I want to answer that question, because I don't really want to put it in those terms. I think it depends on, as I argued, there are some of these programs that have 10 times the impact per dollar spent than others, right? What impact do you want to have in the economy, and how much are you currently spending and can be redeployed in some way? You know, I thought about for this presentation trying to add up everything Wisconsin does in economic development. Then I decided that I didn't have enough in-depth knowledge. I've done this for Michigan. Michigan's total annual resources devoted to economic development is about $1 billion. Obviously, it's a great success. We're just turning things around. You know, in the case of Wisconsin, I don't really know all the resources being devoted to economic development. I mean, some of them may be hidden. For example, technical colleges. I assume that they do a lot of customized job training that's not even labeled as such for individual companies and in this state. And I assume that the tuition at technical college in Wisconsin is priced well below the actual cost of providing the service. I don't know how much below. So right now, you're already doing significant activities in that area. I don't know if you can add it up because I don't, you know, I don't know if, does anyone actually know what that quantity is? So I think you first need to really ascertain what resources are you really devoting to economic development? I know the Legislative Audit Bureau and the Fiscal Bureau try to do that to some extent. I think there are some important activities that need to be included in that, such as the implicit subsidy of technical colleges. In order to get a full comprehensive view, you may find out that, in fact, if you add up everything you're doing, including all the tax credits, all the implicit subsidies, that you actually have enough to have the impact on the economy you want. If you redeployed those resources in the higher productivity economic development, you might very well be devoting $1 billion to economic development once you count everything properly. I just simply don't know what that amount is. But my point is, you're not going to do it with $1 million. You need to be more than that. I don't know if I want to get pinned down on this de minimis thing. That sounds like a legal language. Are you a lawyer?
Yeah, I just wanted to say I agreed with my learned colleague, of not coming up with a number. but I think this issue of, you know, more kind of qualitative scale, in the sense that, you know, you have an industry that's at some place in terms of the learning curve, and then you move that industry to a different place. Well, I think that would be, if you're doing that, that's scale, as opposed to, you know, well, we helped five companies, or we, you know, et cetera.